nice to be able to speak English. Most places I go, they're translating. So you pause. In fact, in India, they translate 5 times. So a 10-minute message takes an hour. Oh, joy, oh, rapture. This is a great redeeming church, you know, and pastor picked me up within 15 minutes. He told me he was not obsessed about bicycles. Yeah. Then he talked about them for the next hour and 10 minutes. I'm happy to say I know more about bicycles than my children do now. But you're redeeming because since then I've been treated so well, I'm not so worried. You know, you guys have redeemed the situation. This is a redeeming church. You know, you get this coffee. This is delightful. I've never had anybody do that. Give me I feel like Joseph with a cup of many colors, you know. And pastors, elders are Peter and John. Where's James? You know, this is a great church. Just, here we go. Oh, there's James, huh? Hi, James. Lord's brother, it's good to have you here. But I really am enjoying here. I've been in England several times over the last 6 years, but always in Luton, and so I thought that was England. Boy, was I in for a surprise. You've got grass. You know, you see the pictures in America. Oh, do you love England? No. If I want to see cement, I can go into the prisons, you know. But it's really pretty. And yesterday was a glorious day to be inside. But this is a great place. I'm glad to be here. As you can probably tell, I'm American. Sorry. And I have a husband. Well, thank you. One per. All right. Well, there you go. I have a friend. If you'd like to be my friend later, you can line up and we'll sign you up. I'm always looking for new people to be friends with. But I have 3 children, 3 boys. They're ages 21, 20, and 19. They hate being called boys. I think of them as here and they're there. But they also send always a warm hello to every church I go to. First time in, they say, Mom, tell them we exist. So I do that. And it's funny, every once in a while, people will be in there with a video camera, and I ask people not to put me up on YouTube. I don't like being on YouTube. I never want to be on YouTube. But my boys are my detectives. You know, they'll go down, and Mom, you're on again. You know, and so one time I came out, my son Chris, he's the youngest, and he's just a character. And so he says, Mom, and I came out of my room. He goes, you're on YouTube again. Here we go. And he's looking for the church that is doing it. And so I come out, and he's getting ready to deal with it. He goes, wait a minute, you're talking about me. Let's, wait a minute, wait a minute. And he's listening. He goes, let's leave this one. You're doing the talking, but it's about me. So anyway, it is kind of fun. I wanted to get a little lighthearted before I speak about what I'm going to talk about today, because it can feel painful. The name of my testimony, and the only hard thing about having a good testimony is means you were really a jerk in order to get it. You know, your life had to have been pretty bad. And unfortunately, I have a very good testimony. And so I don't want people to ever see me as a victim, because I'm not. And so I always entitle my testimony whenever given is, I'm not a victim. I don't believe in sharing testimonies for you to feel sorry for me. You can't have a relationship with God and be a victim at the same time. It's absolutely impossible. And it really doesn't matter what the world has done, because God is bigger than anything the world has done. And so if you are aware of God's nature, you'll discover that if you come from a horrible background, by the time you get up to the edge of the kingdom, you're doing really good because you've learned a lot. And so what really is miraculous is you can come from a horrible, horrible, horrible place, and by the time you're on the journey, you know, 20 miles in, you're recognizing that's the best thing that ever happened to me because of all that I'm learning about God. There are many people that haven't learned a lot of stuff about God because they had a good life. You poor people. I pray for everyone a little difficulty along the way, because the difficulty is what leads you to how great He is. In order to have a miracle, you sort of need one. Do you see what I'm saying? And so often I think we don't experience the miraculous because we're trying to take care of it ourselves. But if we'd stop and say, this is hopeless, hello, he shows up. And so my life was so bad, I needed him. So I want to share that life story with you. And then if there's time, I promise to get you out by 3, is it? What does it mean when a speaker looks at the clock? Absolutely nothing. You know, it's like the Sicilians, you know, the red lights for the cars mean nada, nothing. Not even a suggestion. Oh, look at the pretty Christmas lights. Anyway, I'll behave. So I want to go into my life story, and I want to give you a piece of the main thing that I learned about God. When I was born into our family, we had 7 children. My dad was a very, very successful businessman. And we were, in 10 years, 7 kids. Bam, 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 bam. My poor mother, what a saint. I have 3. I don't know how she does it. You know, I just, anyway, so we had this large family. We owned a few homes, so we moved a lot. So you really didn't have friends in the neighborhood. You kind of, your brothers and sisters, if you didn't like them, it was too bad because that's your permanent friend. And so we kind of, mostly my oldest brother was on his own, and then we paired off going down. Well, when I was about 3 years old, unbeknownst to my folks, there were some neighbor boys in the neighborhood that began to rape me continually. And that abuse caused real issues in my soul. They were doing physical things to me, but that was painful, but it wasn't the excruciating pain. What happens to the human soul when a person is abused is horrible. We have no idea what people suffer through rejection or somebody hurting them or abusing them. It's their soul that is being hurt. And while God cries out because he created us so valuable. And so after that was discovered and my mom put an end to it, then one of my brothers, he started to abuse me. So by the time I was 14 years old, they figure I'd probably been raped over 100 times in my life. So I was pretty confused inside, to say the least. And what came from that was I became a multiple personality. Now, you don't know you're one. You think everybody's got a crowd in there. But because we don't understand people are different than us at that age, we just assume everybody functions that way. Well, when I was about 14 years old, I was in school. I was a basketball player. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I was their surprise because I could make a 3-pointer at my height. And they didn't know what to do with that. But so I played a lot of basketball. And one time in a basketball game, the ball went up, hit a beam in the air, and came down and hit me in the temple in my head and knocked me out badly. So the ambulance obviously came and carted me off. I woke up quite a while later, and I was disoriented, and it took me a little time. But I recovered and went on and obviously went back to school. And somebody, to be funny, thought they'd frighten me, called me and threw a basketball at me. And when I turned, it hit me right in the same place. And because this was still tender, this time it caused damage. So I was put in a coma. When I recovered, I was a schizophrenic and I had regressed to a 2-year-old level. And it was an utterly confusing time in my life. And within the next year, I became violent. There were 3 people following me that you couldn't see. And so it was awfully confusing. Voices on the inside, voices on the outside. I became incredibly violent. I had a blood disorder that came up from this. And so they didn't know what to do with me. When I tried to kill a couple people, they locked me up, go figure. So they put me in a straitjacket, and there I stayed till I was almost 19 years old. While I was in the hospital then, in those days, they didn't know what to do. I mean, I'm old now. Not, you know, as old as some, Charles, but we lovingly call him the fossil, you know. He's a very wise fossil, but have you ever seen him text on his phone? And then when he likes what he says, he goes, I don't know what he said, but he liked it. Anyway, so Hey, get over there. Anyway, with all of this happening and all this issue of trauma and whatnot, you know, by the time I'm 19, I'm an utter disaster. I have a blood disorder. They said I'm not going to live. The doctors became abusive. There were some people in mental institutions are sicker than their patients. And because you're an animal to them, they just do whatever they want to you. They figure you're going to die, and if you say they're hurting me, nobody's going to believe you anyway because you're nuts. So it's a horrible situation. My parents had no idea. And to make matters worse, they started to give me shock treatment. Well, what shock treatment does is it erases pieces of memory. And what a multiple personality simply is a memory isolated with amnesia. And it appears to be a separate person. And what the whole goal of the soul in creating this disorder is to take painful memories and put them over here so they don't hurt the host. Okay? And that's how multiples are formed. Through constant painful abuse, if you're creative, and unfortunately I was creative, you can create another person to take that memory away. So when they're hurting you, you're not there anymore. You do it a little bit. Well, have you ever driven somewhere and you've been upset and you don't remember how you got home, but you got home? Well, you've isolated yourself. One person's thinking and one person's driving. Well, a multiple just has a very high level of putting that amnesia around a memory. So with every memory that they were killing people. Do you see the terror of that? So when they would take me in, I would tell my mother, they're killing us. And in my mind, I was thinking that my parents didn't care that they were murdering the people in there. And so it was a very hard, confusing thing. My mom has gone to be with the Lord. It was my best friend. And she earned a spot. Boy, she was one of those moms that when you fall apart, you find out who's the strong one in the family. Very gentle, very quiet. Good proper Bostonian lady, but knows how to fight when it's time to fight. I never heard my mother fight till the doctor got involved on things and she stood up. And I thought, huh, who are you? What have you done with my mother? I mean, she just was very strong and very good. And so my mom, she was Catholic. Most of us kind of felt sorry for her, and we didn't want to go to church and, you know, and all of that. My dad was atheist, so he said they don't have to. So I didn't really grow up in church, and I kind of grew up thinking God was a scam. And when I got older, I was going to prove he didn't exist, kind of strayed from my plan. So I didn't really have much knowledge of church and all of that. But my mother had this real heart for God. She didn't have a personal relationship, but the heart was there. She just didn't know she could. And so as I'm so ill, she's gone to her priest and she said, you know, we got to help my daughter. And he said, you know, God doesn't heal people today. And my mother was heartbroken. And he said, but she's Catholic, so we'll pray her out of purgatory when she dies. Well, that's real comforting. Great counselor. And my mom said it just for the first time, she felt religion became ridiculous. She said, first of all, you hated God. And why do you have to wait in purgatory? And she said all of it seemed silly. So she didn't know what to do and where to turn. When I was born, I was born premature. The doctor said I wouldn't live. And at that time, my mom felt she heard God talk to her. And what God said was, she'll live and she'll serve me mightily one day. And so my mom thought I'd be a nun. Ha! And that didn't quite work out either. So now here I'm in the mental institution, and she's got this way in the back of her head of, I thought there was a God, and I thought you talked to me, and she was going to serve me. And now she's laying in this room. She was looking in this little window in my hospital room, looking at me, and she said I was in a straitjacket, muttering to people that didn't exist. I'd thrown up all over myself, and she said, I just couldn't take it. I thought, what is, you know, how can you redeem that? And she was just totally shocked inside that maybe there isn't a God and all these things going on. And she was really upset. And so she cried out with a, you know, and a nurse came by and she turned to the nurse and said, you know, I love her so much, I can't go in there anymore. I can't. I can't handle what's happening to her. And she instantly heard that same voice say, I love her so much, I can't leave her. I'm in there with her. Well, that so impacted my mom's heart of God's love. She said, I couldn't see him in there, but I knew he was. And it caused this rise of, he can do anything he wants to do, whatever the priest has to say. So there was this surge of faith that rose up, and she, on the way home, looked for a Christian bookstore, found a Bible, and wrote the date that, you know, God is going to, and I have that Bible today, God is going to help her. And she just had clung to that. She stopped on the way home at a restaurant that day, and she went in, and there was a Catholic priest in there. And the priest was kind, and my mom said, I have a problem. Can I talk to you? And he said, have lunch with me. So she sat down and began to tell him of my situation. And he was very kind, and he looked up, and he said, I don't want to argue with your priest, but God does heal people today. You know, and he's not intimidated by your daughter's circumstance or situation. She is in grave trouble. Then he did something that was remarkable. He said, but what about you? My mom said, what? He said, have you ever received Jesus into your heart? Are you born again? My mom said, well, I'm a Catholic. He said, so am I, but the church can't save us. You must be born again. And he began to talk to her about having a relationship with Jesus. Well, that wasn't a difficult, it was an easy one. She was just an accident waiting to happen in the kingdom, you know. And so she just quickly received that and decided to stop going to the church she was going to, but to go to this other priest church. It was a couple towns over. And she began to go to that. And the church was a real unique one. It was a very small one run by two pastors. One was a priest and one was a Baptist pastor. And they'd both been kicked out of the denominations for being filled with the Holy Spirit and liking the other religion. And so they found each other. Well, let's do this together. So here we have the Catholic priest that's been kicked out, and you have the Baptist minister kicked out, and they've got their own church. And so my mom started to go and grow, and it was only a church about 50 people, very little church, and she began to tell everybody about my situation. So they then somehow, and I don't know how this started, I guess when I get to heaven I'll find out, they got a rally going of, we know what our assignment is. Our assignment is to get this kid out of the mental institution. So they began praying and talking and praying. They began to come up to the hospital. It was terrible. You know, you're in a straitjacket, that's bad enough, but they're putting on music tapes and preaching and talking. You can't do anything but try to bite them and kick them. Because you don't have any hands, you can't really move much. And so they just kept coming no matter what I did. And so a few of them decided that I was possessed. And if they could cast the devil out of me, all would be well. But my mother, if you would ever meet my mother, she was just the gentlest soul. And they thought, how can we tell Nan Hartel that her kid's possessed? She's going to faint. I mean, she just, and so they didn't know what to do, so they got a plan. They said, well, if we could get her out of the hospital and away from her mother, then we could cast the demons out and give her back to her mom. And this was their plan, simple, what they were going to do. Well, they were working on their plan, God was working on his. And so my mom got permission to every once in a while bring me home for a couple days over the holidays. So she got me to come home a full weekend instead of just a one night. And she took me to church. That was a fun experience. Not. It was a church that was little but mighty. You know, kind of one of those lean, mean family machine churches. And they were just filled with the Holy Spirit. And they were all excited that I came. And they're dancing and singing, raising their hands, shouting, talking in African. I found out it wasn't African, but at that time I thought it was. And they're just doing all this stuff. And I remember thinking, they call me crazy. Not one of these people are locked up. You know, I couldn't believe it. So I'm watching and watching, and it dawned on me they were happy crazy. And I was angry crazy and depressed crazy. So I thought the goal is to be happy crazy. You know, if you can't help being crazy, that's all right, but you just have to be happy about it. And so I thought, but how do you do that? And so my lost state. So that was my one experience of church. And now I'm back in the hospital. And the doctor, I want you to hear my heart with this, because don't get mad at him. All right. I was telling him how horrible life was, and I just wanted to be dead. This was my life. It's over, you know, and why would you want to live in that kind of pain? I didn't believe in heaven, and I didn't believe in God, and I just want to be done. Just peace. And he told me that would be a good idea. So he taught me how to kill myself and then put me in a halfway house so I could do it, get away with it. Gave me enough medicine. And so I did try to kill myself, but God miraculously was there. And what I did was I took enough medicine to kill you in about 15 minutes, if you could keep it down. He told me how to keep from throwing up. And then I cut my wrists, and then I'm waiting to die. There was somebody that didn't even live in our state, that lived in a different state, that was connected to my parents. For whatever reason, they contacted me, found out what I was doing, and called an ambulance. Otherwise, I would have died. The ambulance that showed up, I don't remember getting into the ambulance. I woke up in it because my heart had stopped, and they put one of those electric things on you. Oh, that's a real trip. It's really weird. But anyway, so when I came to, I'm looking at the lights outside. We're headed to the hospital. And I remember being foggy, and then it dawned on me. I was in an ambulance, and they were trying to save my life, and I didn't want them to. I thought, it was really tricky getting this far. We're trying to die. Doing it again is going to be exhausting. And so I just let it be. I just want to be done. And so I had this kind of air mask on my face, and I started to pull it off. And the lady working over me said, it's all right. And she kept trying to put it back on. And I said, am I going to die? And she said, well, that depends. Are you ready to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior? And I just looked at her and said, I hate him. She said, well, then, sweetheart, you're not going anywhere. And I thank God that he had a saint in the ambulance. And I watched it, that although, and it's a good thing for the church to say, what are we to do to help? That was a very godly thing for them to join forces about a soul they had no real contact with. But it's just right to free people. And yet God was working in unison, getting me ready for what they were doing. And I find that absolutely, continually astounding. And so she then prayed this prayer, this lady in the ambulance. And I don't remember the whole prayer, but I remember part of it because it changed me inside. It was a revelation, what she prayed. And in fact, I've never prayed this way. And if somebody did, I'd say, you know, that's not theologically sound. What she prayed was, Lord, I don't know what's happened to this little girl, but if someone needs to die, let it be me. You know, take me, not her, and help her. Well, that's really, God doesn't need someone to die tonight. I mean, that's not theologically something that I would agree with, but it was what hit my heart. In my fallen understanding, this person was giving up her life for me. And I couldn't figure that out. And then she started to talk in African. You know, and she's praying. And while she was praying, I suddenly had a thought. What if there is a God? And what if he's nice? It was the most amazing revelation. God might be nice. And so she was so shook up. I decided I would never, ever try to kill myself again, because I would never want to hurt someone like her like that. And it was amazing what happened in my own soul because of this thing called love. See, that was agape love. They will know you are Christians by your love. She didn't have anybody in church watching her. She was just honestly serving God in her job. And that's powerful. Well, I lived, in case you didn't know. And when I got to the hospital, they pumped out my stomach. That was fun. Well, time came and the church found their plan. Their plan was, they used to have in the 70s, this was in the big revival in the U.S. of the Jesus movement, and they had these big camps they would run where you'd go for a week and camp out thousands together, and would come singers and preachers, and tents would go up, and there was a great big whatever, hallelujahs. I've only been to one, and I didn't like it. It was this one. And so they thought, okay, if we could get, they call me Boo at home. If we could get Boo out of the hospital and take her to this, her mom isn't there, we can cast demons out of her, and there we go. So they went to my mom, and they said, look, we want to take Boo with us to Pennsylvania. We lived in New York at this time, a place near Rochester, New York, called Marion. And my mom said, you know, that's not going to work. Her father's an atheist and hates God. Now, every time my mother would say that, I chuckle. How can you be an atheist and hate God if you don't believe in God? That part I just think is cute. But somehow they justified it. And she said, so it's not going to work. So they said, well, will you ask him? So they went to my dad, and my mom went to my dad. And he said, you know what, I don't want this kid anymore, whatever. You know, he had figured mom had gone crazy in religion because I was damaged and she couldn't handle it. So he's lost two so far, was his feeling. And so anyway, it was really interesting. My mom then went to tell the psychiatrist, who was Jewish, there's a Christian group going to take my daughter to this camp for a week and pray over her. He said, that's not going to work. She's violent. She might kill them first. You know, this doesn't work. He's a dead prophet. You really think a dead prophet is going to help? And I remember them arguing outside my room. That's when I discovered my mother. This soft, gentle, I'm here, honey, was, look, you. Who is that out there? He sounded more like my father, but with my mother's voice. He said, this is my child, and I'm saying she can go. He says, well, you can't do that. And she said, I'm sorry. And they went around and around and around on it. And finally he said, she's a ward of the state. I'm almost 19. And my mother said, what? And he said, yes, ever since you signed her off to the state. Well, she never did because they forgot. So my mother had a loophole. She said she's going. So the doctor, I think he didn't want to lose face. I'm not quite sure. But so he said, okay, she can go based on three conditions. Number one, she needs to be tied up at night in a bed. Every night I was tied into a bed. It was a lot of fun. Number two, she's got to have a nurse that will administrate her medicine. I was on about 18 pills a day that left me in a zombie state, so I couldn't hurt anybody. I did get the doctor once. They every morning would come in and give you these shots, you know, if you'd been naughty, and I was naughty a lot. And so they came in to give me a shot, and what an idiot. He puts it on the tray next to me and turns around. You can just imagine. It was my one day of ha-ha. I got in big trouble for that, too, but I still live it and love it. But anyway... How do you like it? It was really... Anyway, we'll leave that bit. So he probably had reasons for not caring for me a lot. But so anyway, he said that if she's got her medicine given to her by a nurse, she can go. And then the third thing was that they needed to have a group that was always protective. Well, mom wasn't worried because there was a group. But the other two things, she was all disappointed. How are they going to tie her in bed at a camp? And you know, her medicine administered by a nurse. Well, this little group was zealots. They were excited because to them it was permission. So they got a little meeting going. Said, okay, now the first thing we need to do is we need to get a nurse. Who here is a nurse? No nurses. Okay, we need to find a nurse to get her born again. So they began to go over two towns over to the hospital in teams. And they go over and witness and witness and witness and witness until finally a nurse said, I receive. Ha! Born again nurse. So they brought the nurse back and said, listen, we want to give you a paid vacation. We're going to pay you to go with us and learn more about God. She was in, thought it was a great idea. Okay? then they started kind of cookie sales and all those kind of things so they could rent a camper because then they can tie me in bed. And so here they go. They've got it all set. So they come up to tell me in a couple days, I'm going to go to this Jesus thing. Little obstacle they didn't count on. I didn't want to go. The doctor was quite pleased. And so there's a couple of these guys, my mom and the doctor in the room, and I'm sitting tied up trying to kick everybody. They tell me I'm going to go, and I said, I'm not going anywhere. I don't want to go there. I just want to go home. And the doctor said, well, I guess there we have it. She didn't want to go. You can't make her go. I mean, that's not right. So one of the guys, he was Italian, and my husband loves to say, you are really saved by an Italian. He's Italian. And he came over, and he whispered something in my ear. And that changed my mind instantly. What he whispered was, we'll set you free. Well, I thought he meant out of the straitjacket, off you go. He meant we're going to get you and God is going to set you free. You know, so what he meant, God used in a totally different way. And I said, I'll go because I just thought I'm getting untied. They called me Houdini because I was really good at escaping. You know, I remember one time they started a fire in the solarium. And when they all ran down there, I went in the nurse's station, pushed the button and went out. I forgot to take my pajamas off, though. So it was, I was caught at the door leaving the building, but, you know, so I was always trying to go home was the whole thing. I just wanted to go home and miss my mom. So off we go. Well, I was possessed and, being crazy and possessed and being put in the middle of thousands of Christians in a big camp is not a fun place to be. But at this camp, there was a lady there that was in this big tent where they were selling things, and she was sitting in a wheelchair. She was painting with her mouth. And so I went over thinking, oh, a friend of mine is in a wheelchair. Maybe she could help my friend. Like, I don't need the help. I had learned that all the Christians were happy, crazy, and liars. In fact, we need to pray for you. I kept you up. I'm not exactly calling you a liar, but I have Tanya as my proof. That's not fully accurate, but I forgive you. You'll have the mic later. You're all right. Microphone warfare. But anyway, so they had always said whenever I would say, you know, I'm sick or whatever, they would look at me and they would, you know, say, no, honey, you're fine. Right. I knew I was nuts. I knew they knew I was nuts, but they didn't have the courage to say, yeah, you're crazy. So I meet up with this lady, Johnny, and I start to talk to her, and she looked up at me, and she says, you're mentally ill. Well, yes, I am. I'm crazy. Does it show? Yeah, it does. Oh, an honest Christian, you know, and what you need to understand was that impacted me. If you have a handicapped person, don't play with it. Don't treat them like they're less than you, but don't pretend nothing's wrong because it just makes you out to be the fool. Now, that's a lesson. No, I'm teasing. So when she said that, I was taken back, and she said, you should go to the healing tent. And she's sitting in a wheelchair. I should go to the healing tent like you did? She said, oh, I'm healed. Her hands are crippled up. She's sitting in this wheelchair with this brace. And I said, really? She said, yeah. When I received Christ, I told him that what the best for me for service, if it's best for me to serve you standing, then help me stand. If it's best that I serve you sitting down, then I'll sit down. She said, this wheelchair is for you, not me. You wouldn't have come to me. Many come to me because I'm sitting down, and they wouldn't come. And I thought, and again, there was that service of others. Just blew my mind because I knew she believed what she was saying. And I couldn't imagine staying handicapped so others could be free. I remember just looking at her with this confusion inside. And everybody inside me was all talking about it. The three outside were telling me to run. And so I went to the healing tent. It freaked me out. There were people being healed, so I threw up and ran away. But I couldn't get the healing tent out of my mind. So that night, around midnight, I shuffled back to the healing tent. And there were about five guys sitting around in a circle. And they were discussing something about camp, the problem that they had, which was me. Because I would show up to meetings and scream all these horrible things, obscenities, while they're trying to preach. And now this part I'll never get. They could never catch me. I walked like this. I don't know how they couldn't catch me. It's like, you know, it takes me 15 minutes to get to the door, buddy. But somehow they couldn't catch me, and they were praying, what do we do? And I come. So they said, well, here she is. So they got up quietly, and they began to walk towards me. And I'm backing up because all the voices outside and in are screaming, run, run, run. But there was something inside, remembering the lady in the ambulance, thinking, is there a nice God? And there was, for the first time, a crying out deep inside that said, somebody help me. I felt caged and confused, and I didn't know what to do. Well, as they're now gathering around me, some are going behind me. Well, I was used to that. It's straitjacket time. So I was waiting to be grabbed and muscled down, and so I'm just trying. I'm just panicking inside, and there's this one really big guy, and he's walking towards me, quietly watching me, and I'm getting scareder and scareder of him backing up, and he said, honey, are you afraid of black men? I said, no. I'm afraid of that. And he had a jar of oil in his hand. He said, oh, I bet you are. And that's all I remember. I was slain in the spirit, and I was down for a couple hours, I guess. And so they had nothing to do but let's get some coffee and wait. I mean, so they waited for quite a while and chatted, I guess, while I was laying there. I don't really know. And but in a couple hours, I sat up, and it was incredible. It was a wonderful moment. I remember when I started to sit up, they began to help me sit up. And they were real quiet, just helping me get up. They didn't say anything. And instantly, there were three things that hit me. Number one, all the anger was gone. It was just gone. It was the most amazing sense of, not really peace, but serenity. And those are two different things for me. I don't know if they are for you, but it's more of an emotional peace. And then a physical piece. The other thing was the drugs were gone. I could think. I hadn't been able to think for so long. And then the final thing was my face hurt. And we figured it out later. It's because the whole time I've been laying down, I was smiling. And I hadn't smiled in over 4 years. So those muscles hadn't been used. So my face was just in incredible pain right in through these muscles. Well, as they got me up, I thought, well, I want to thank them because I feel this much better. I didn't really know why I'd been laying down. And I just wanted to say thank you. And now I'm speaking in African. And I went like this because I thought, oh, no, I'm still crazy. But they were shouting and happy and laughing. And it was like, these guys are nuts. And then it dawned on me, I had just become happy crazy. I thought, I made it. This is it. You're just nuts, but you're happy, so I get to go home. And that was what filled my heart. And I just started to cry while I was laughing. And I said, do I get to go home? And they said, yes, you get to go home. And they were so excited. They picked me up, carried me down, and baptized me at 2 a.m. And water was cold. And I went into bed, and they said, you don't need to be tied in bed. And my one of the people really trusted the healing, so they took the medicine and went and threw it away. And so I'm there the last couple of days, and the lady in the wheelchair, Johnny, she was very, very wise. She called me aside and said, you know, I need you to talk to me because you have a very long journey in front of you now. You've been touched by God, and I believe healed by God, but you have a lot of things to walk out of because there's a lot of damage there. So I want to teach you what you need to do in this journey. If she hadn't done that, I don't think I would have made it. She said, I want you to read the Bible every day. Do you have a Bible? I said, no. So she gave me a Bible. She said, I want you to read the Bible every day and talk to God every day. Okay. She said, now you're going to get afraid. And when you get afraid, I'm going to tell you how you fix it. Sing. You sing until God gives you peace. I said, but I feel pretty good. And she goes, I understand that. She said, you've been in a cage a long time where the devil has kept you. But now the door's been opened, the devil's been knocked down, and you're running. But he's going to be up soon and running after you. So you need to sing. I said, okay. And she goes, do you have a song you like here at this camp? And I like the song, Praise the Name of Jesus. She goes, learn that song. And then whenever you're afraid, you sing. I sang the song for 11 years because it was a process. My favorite part of the story is next, and I get a little emotional on it, but it was going home to my mom. When I went home to my mom, she was in the mud room in the beginning of where you walked into our house, and she turned around, and she looked at me for a minute, and she just fell on the floor, crumpled, and started to cry. Because she said she knew. She said, your eyes were clear. And she thought, my daughter is back. It was at that moment. She said, that's why I lived. And she turned to me. She said, you are going to serve God. And I remember looking at her. And it was really weird. I said, I don't know him. I don't know if I like him. So I didn't say that to her. But I thought, whatever, mother. But watching the peace of my mother's face. I have three boys now, so I really understand that. But that part always touches me very deep at the blessing of the mother God gave me. Well, the doctor didn't buy the healing very well. She brought me back because she had to the hospital, but she said, I want to sign her out. And the doctor said, excuse me, she was gone for a week. She's back. My mother said, no, she's been healed. Doctor said, oh, by a dead prophet? In your dream, she's going back in. And now I'm scared. The only thing worse about being insane in a mental institution, it's worse if you're not sane and put in that. And I'm looking at this, and they're going to put me back in a straitjacket, and everything inside is screaming, no, you won't. And there were still the voices. I was still schizophrenic, by the way. I still have multiples inside. That was the journey I needed to walk out. They did cast demons out, and they took out the obstacles for me on the journey, gave me the tools, which was a relationship with Jesus Christ. But then there was a walk to be had. And so fortunately, the doctor didn't have any way of gauging if I was still mentally ill. He only had the physical side. So he had my blood taken, and it was fine. He had my blood taken again, and it was fine. So he said, well, I think we must have got the medicine somehow just right on. I said, I haven't had medicine for 4 days. He didn't know what to do with that. My mom says, well, I think we can call that a miracle, can't we? He said, well, wait a minute. She goes, excuse me. You're the one saying, so if no medicine is involved, please explain her blood to me. Well, maybe it's a miracle. Fine, whatever. I want it in the papers. Write down, this is a miracle. And he goes, poor guy. So he did finally, and he said, well, I can't just let you take her from the hospital. So they agreed that we would meet an hour every day. So we did that day after day after day, and my mother would just sit in the corner and watch and knit. My mom loved to knit. And she was knitting, and we were, one day when we went in, the doctor was in a grumpy mood, and I asked him what was wrong, and he said he and his wife had had a fight, and we talked about the fight, and we began to work on it. My mother went, wait a minute, wait a minute. She's counseling you. And he just, you could see this frustrated, I don't know what to do with you. So at that point, he just let me go. Now, that was the beginning of the journey, and I don't have time to share with you what I learned on the journey, but I want to share with you, if you were to sum it all up, what did I learn? That would be found in 1 John chapter 5. Verses 1 through 3. I think they're going to put it up on the screen. Okay. If you look through these verses, it's going to tell you that everyone that is born of God, everyone who loves is going to love people. Because people are part of God's creation, basically, is what I mean. And this is how we love the children of God. By doing what? By loving God and carrying out his commands. Now here's the most amazing part of the verse, is verse number 3. His commands are not burdensome. How many find the commandments of God a burden? Anybody? So you're never sinning. You got it down? Let's try again. How many find it difficult? The rest of you are liars. We've got yours. See, your hand's not up. We need enough teasing. Okay. I remember the first time I read that, I threw the Bible across the floor and thought John was an idiot. Not John, where are you? Not you. I saw you somewhere. But this is crazy. The key is the fourth verse. This is the victory that's overcome the world, even our faith. See, we don't do the commandments. We live in a God who lives by the commandments. What I learned was that I didn't need to get me out. I didn't need to perform. I didn't need to do anything except learn to lean on Jesus. That's all I needed to do. And from learning that lesson and walking out, what I've discovered was he gave me three tools that I want to tell you about. The first tool is for your intellect. When you're confused and it's causing an anxiety within your soul, get into the Word and talk to God. Ask him what he thinks. You stop thinking. Look at what God thinks and rest there. The next step is once you're done with that, turn on a worship tape and start singing. Don't leave it there with your intellect, because if you only learn it in your intellect, under pressure, you're not going to lean. You're going to go back to what your heart knows. Does that make sense? Worship is for the heart. So as Johnny had taught me, read the Bible and talk to God, and when it gets tough, sing. What I learned was when you put reading his word and then singing side by side, it takes what you have in your head down to your heart. Because God gave us worship for the emotions. And a person that gets a revelation from going from their head to their heart is a person that is emotionally kissing God. And that's what worship is. To worship is to kiss towards God, is to love him. And from that open heart place, God can take what your mind is learning and drop it into your heart. And when your heart knows, it won't leave it. Do you know what I'm saying? How many find that when you sing worship songs, you don't have to go through them very often to memorize them? Is that true? Why? I mean, if you took the Bible, how hard would it be to memorize the New Testament? Tricky? Yes. If it was all in song, how hard would it be? Easier. Why? Because the intellect and the emotions are functioning together. When you're singing, your emotions are learning next to your intellect. And so it becomes naturally memorized. Isn't that incredible? He created us that way. So if you're going through tough things, I don't know what you're going through. But I suspect some of you have struggles. If England is anything like the rest of the world, it's not easy. Maybe your leadership are a bunch of humble servants that make sure you get everything you need. No? Okay, well. And then I fear England is the same as the rest of the world. One honest soul in the back. The emperor has no clothes, you know. So, when it gets tough, when it gets difficult, God has given us tools that we can apply. What we tend to do is try to understand our situation and fix it. And try and then cry out to God with a prayer. But God wants to walk with you through your circumstances. When I was little, about 5 or 6, I had a girlfriend whose mother was mentally ill. And she tried to kill her 2 children and burn down their house and then killed herself. So the whole household was in uproar, bringing the 2 children over to the house, and it was tragic. And I was utterly confused why, and the girl's name was Chris, why she was crying so hard. And so I, you know, questioned my mom, what's happening? She said, Mrs. Moses was mentally ill. What's that? It's when your brain doesn't work right. Man, that terrified me. So I started to pray to Mother Mary every night, please don't let me be mentally ill. Please don't let me be mentally ill. Please don't let me. And now here I am, crazy. What do you think one of the first questions I asked God was? Why? All I asked was not this. That's all I asked. And I thought, well, maybe it's because of praying to Mother Mary. So I said, was it because I was talking to Mary and not you? And he giggled. He says, no, we heard those prayers. We're not that egotistical. We heard your heart. And I said, well, then why? He said, are you still afraid of being mentally ill? No. See, he freed me by taking me through what I went through. He didn't cause it, but he allowed it. See, the devil hears your greatest fear and attacks you with it. God will say, okay, have your play. And then he says, come on, let's get delivered of it. And now the devil has no hold on you. The devil has no way of frightening me with mental illness. I don't care what the disorder is. I am no longer a schizophrenic. I am no longer a multiple personality because I've walked out with God. If it had been a magic wand, I'd still be afraid of it. But I know how to grab a hand of the Almighty and say, you got nothing on us, and walk out. We get bullied way too much by our fears. And the reason we're afraid is we don't know how to use the tools God has given us to connect to him in such a way we walk out in victory. And this is the victory that's overcome the world. Our faith. Faith is our connection to God. It's not, okay, I need to have faith, so I'll claim I believe until I believe. That's not faith. Charles is sitting in a chair because he has faith in that chair. But if the last 10 chairs he sat in crumbled to the ground, do you think he'd be sitting so comfortably? No. He'd be testing it. Is that right or wrong? Faith is based on you walking out of situations with God and watching him stand with you, protect you, care for you, cry with you, and allow you to struggle through it while he's holding your hand. And then you know who he is and you know who you are in his eyes. And when you've got that, you tell me what the devil can do. You see, I'm convinced that we live in this illusion that we're in control of some things in our lives. Folks, I've got some bad news for you. There's no aspect of your life you're in control of. Oh, we think we are when we can put money in the bank. Financially, I'm in control. Have you seen the banks lately? Ha! You're in control. My dad was very wealthy, and with one car accident, it was all gone. What was that worth? When you think you're medically in control? I take vitamins, so I'm in control. Really? Some even ride bicycles for hours thinking it makes them fit. These are the really crazy people. And I'm just praying they don't get hit by a car being out on the road so much. Seems to me pretty dangerous. We're not in control, folks. The only hope we have is a God that is bigger than anything the world is going to throw at us. Because the kingdom of this world stinks. It is a fallen, broken mess. And there's no way you're going to escape it. You have to walk through it. And God was so aware of that. He so loved the world, he sent Jesus to teach you how to connect to him so he can walk through it with you side by side. That's how much he loves us. That's what I learned. I didn't learn to try to avoid pain. I learned to walk through it and be victorious over it. And when you can learn that, you tell me what anybody can handle you, hand to you. It isn't going to work. I remember an incredible day of victory in my life. I was asked to go to a court trial. I don't want to go into the details. But in this court trial, it was a massive one. Somebody claimed somebody killed somebody. And I happened to be on the scene with all of this happening. So they brought me in, and I'm the one person that's going to witness. And it's intimidating. Large jury, judge up here, and you're sitting in this little box, and you must tell the truth. And you're sitting there, and it's a little nerve-wracking. So the people that didn't like my testimony said, but she's crazy, because they could prove my mental past. So what do you think they decided they needed to do? They needed to prove whether or not I was crazy. So they brought in a doctor. Guess which one they brought in? The one that abused me over and over. Now here we are, years later. I'm now declared sane. And there he sits. And at the end of the trial, the judge leaned over and he had said to me after he read, I was going into YWAM and all, I said, praise God, what does that tell you? Okay, we know something between us with our code language, what that means. So I'm getting ready to leave. I'm being dismissed. I don't have to come back. The doctor is sitting about where Joyce is. And I'm starting to get out of the box, and the judge says, oh, wait a minute. How was your treatment in the hospital? And I looked right over at the doctor. What do you think he's thinking? Oh, my God. She's just been declared sane. What do you think I wanted to do? Well, let me get back in the box. Jury, sit still. You've got another job to do. And I heard Jesus say, let him go. Let him go. He represents everything that was ever horrifyingly done bad to me. Jesus, why should I let him go? He said, I let you go. That settled my heart. I said, Jesus, I can't. I need you to. And Jesus instantly spoke up in my heart, and I heard the words coming out of my mouth. I'm fine. The doctor was shocked. I went out, went to the bathroom, came out of the bathroom, and the doctor was standing there. He says, what's happened to you? I said, what? He said, what's happened to you? He said, if I could bottle what's happened to you, I'd be rich. I said, you need what's happened to me because you're sick. And I may have given you your freedom on this earth, but there's another jury coming. Hey, buddy, you're in deep doo-doo. And he started to cry. His wife had left him. He was old now. He received the Lord, got filled with the Holy Spirit, and died a few months later. And what I learned that day was God loved me as much as he loved that man. We find that very difficult to comprehend. The bad people God doesn't like as much. But that lie keeps us in a state of performance because we better not be bad because we don't want to be like that guy. Years went by, and remember I said I tried to kill a few people. My mother was one of them, and she wouldn't tell me who the other was. And so years went by, and I'd ask her, and then she died and went to the Lord, and I thought, I'm never going to know. There's a math teacher that showed up in my life 35 years later. It was about a couple years ago. And we found each other on the internet. And he and his wife flew into Rome. That's where we lived. And we began to talk. And I found myself really liking him. But he also knew a lot of my past because he was living there in that era. So after a couple of days, we were getting closer and friends and talking and giggling. They're meeting my kids and all of that. And they were being a lot more friendly than friends would be. They kept almost referring themselves to my as my parents. And I've learned a lot about that since, but I won't go into it now. But I found myself really liking them. And so I felt safe enough. I said, you know, my mom said I tried to kill somebody besides her. He said, yeah, you did. But it's all right. It's over. Let's leave that in the past. I said, can you tell me who it is? And he said, no, if your mom didn't want you to know, why would I? I'm not going to do that. So I bugged him and bugged him. He finally said, we were outside the Colosseum, put his arm, and said, honey, that would be me. He had mentioned it. I said, why didn't you have me arrested? I've never understood that. He said, because God told me to let you go. What do you think that did to my heart? Have you been let go? We've all been let go. But are you free? That becomes a question. The byproduct of a relationship with God is freedom. Regardless of where you're living. It really don't matter. God is bigger than when you're where you're living. You can stay right in the circumstance and he's bigger. It's the most awesome thing. Freedom is not you being free of hard circumstances. Freedom is knowing how to walk through it healthfully and having victory over it. That's freedom. And that's what I learned. So this is what I'd like to do. if you're here today and you would say, I want to be free. I would like to connect to God in such a way that I can walk through my situation holding his hand. Not running away from the situation, not trying to fix the situation, but grab God's hand and begin walking. I want to win. I don't want to survive. I want to be victorious. Then what I want you to do is come on up here, and we're going to pray for you. Is that okay? All right. And if you have a prayer team, that would be great. And this is what I want you to do. The three tools that God gave us, I gave you the first one. For your intellect, for your mind, he's given you his word. For your emotions, he's given worship. And if you can't sing, that's okay. You've got a tape player. It'll sing for you and you can join in. Okay? The third thing is prayer for your will. What moves your will is prayer. And I want you to do the praying, not the person praying for you. I want you to come up and find somebody on the team and you pray first. And I want you to ask God the desire of your heart. Father, this is what I want. Then I want you to do a little bit of homework, okay? I want you to go home and begin to study what God says about that in his word. And every time, take, 15, 20 minutes a day, whatever you can afford. When you're done, have a tape ready to turn on and bow your head and worship. And watch what God does in 6 months. It will change your life. And then you can start giving each other testimonies. Amen? Amen.